You know, as regular listeners of the podcast know, we are writing our new show, The Complete World of Sports Abridged. And it's a question that has come up in the writing process, whether poker is a sport. And I knew that the one person I needed to ask was a veteran broadcaster, Paul Harris, who, in addition to all his other radio talk show duties, hosts the Final Table Poker radio show. Did I get the title of that right?
You did. Thank you very much. I appreciate the plug.
Well, you're welcome for the plug. But I figured, well, you're the guy to ask. So I tweeted you. I tweeted you what I thought was a very simple question. Is poker a sport? And you said, is poker a sport? Call me. So that makes me think that this is a longer conversation.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 183, Game or Sport? We've known veteran broadcaster Paul Harris since we first did his morning show in Washington, D.C. Paul has a great blog at harrisonline.com. He podcasts all his fantastic interviews with the great and the near great, and he guest hosts several different radio shows now across the U.S., including the Final Table radio show. But he took time out from all of this to help us figure out the difference between sports and games.
Well, if you consider sports to be only things that you can do with a ball, mm-hmm. and I guess curling would fit into that because it's a rock and it's kind of a ball,
right?
Then I think the answer would have to be no. But then, you know, I mean, look at some of the other things that were just in the Winter Olympics, like skiing and snowboarding and all of those. There's no ball involved in those. So, okay, those don't fit the definition either, but everybody would call them sports. So maybe poker is a sport. What else makes a sport? I contend that for a sport, you need both an offense and a defense, which again would let out snowboarding and skiing and golf, for that matter,
right.
But would include poker because you're both playing on the offense and on the defense at the poker table. So by my definition, yes, it would. But the more I think about it, the fact that you can do it sitting down with a drink in your hand while talking to other people, I'm going to have to go with it's a game.
It's a game. Well, that's sort of the side of the conversation we're coming down on. And I was talking to Reed yesterday about this, and he said, yes, well, people argue that it's a game, yes, but it requires mental toughness, you know. And he said, well, so does accounting.
So does chess.
So does chess.
I think that we fit kind of into the same category as board games and others, although it is much more intense and there are certainly much higher stakes, unless you talk about high stakes backgammon, and please don't. I don't think that you could really argue that poker is a sport. Don't let the fact that it's on ESPN throw you, Austin.
Okay.
They don't have only sports on there, unless you consider Aaron Andrews peeping to be a sport.
Well, the other thing is, it seems like the definition of a sport is that it must require a certain amount of athletic ability. Now, I don't know how you define athletic ability, but it seems like you need to be in a certain shape, you know?
Unless, you know, that's going to disqualify golf because John Daly played for all those years.
Well, that's true. And I've seen a lot of baseball players that, you know, don't look like they can barely make it to first base.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I just want to clarify one thing right now. Those steroids that I used were for nasal congestion, and that's all.
Thank you for setting the record straight on that, because the internet...
And that's what I told Congress, too.
Well, I think it's great that you, you know, apologized 10 years after everybody knew you were guilty. Like
I had a prescription. I don't have it anymore, but I had a prescription. Wasn't that Mark McGuire's excuse?
He
was doing his doctor's orders.
What do you and McGuire talk about at the meetings?
How gentle Jose Canseco is.
Well, and that's the other thing about this whole baseball steroid thing. Jose Canseco turned out to be the good guy in all of this, or the guy.
That's true.
The guy who told the truth.
That's true. Actually, two summers ago, I played poker with Jose Canseco at the Venetian in one of their deep sack tournaments, and the fact that he and I can both partake in the game at the same time is proof that it's not a sport.
Well, that another good example. On the subject of poker, tell me more about your Final Table radio show, because I've been following, I follow you on Twitter, and I forget your handle. Is it Paul Harris Show, I think?
Yes, Paul Harris Show.
Paul Harris Show. And you, I mean, you have a variety of interesting tweets daily, but I love reading your, you live tweet some of your own poker tournaments, which I just
yes.
find fascinating. It's fascinating to watch. It's like a movie.
Well, we do the Final Table Poker Radio Show. We do it live every week on a radio station here in St. Louis, 590 KFNS, which for your listeners is available also, as you mentioned, as a podcast. And you can go to my website for that. It's harrisonline.com. I post a lot of audio on there from the various radio enterprises I'm involved in, including the Final Table Show. And essentially, it's us talking about our exploits in both cash games and tournament poker. Dennis and I both travel quite a bit. He a little bit more than I, because he travels to things like the European Poker Tour and the Latin American Poker Tour and others. But we both do like to keep our followers updated on what we're doing when we're in the tournaments. And what you're referring to, Austin, was that recently I was back at the Venetian in Las Vegas playing in the NAPT, the North American Poker Tour, which was a huge event with a $4 million prize pool and some 872 people playing in it. And yes, I was tweeting from the table about who I was playing against, pros like Phil Hellmuth and Kathy Liebert, hands that I was involved in as my day went south from the very beginning, and I never made it past day one of the five-day event. I love doing that, and I love, you know, keeping up to date with other friends of mine who are doing the same thing from the tables. So, you know, I think maybe that's another example of why we're not a sport. If you can tweet while you're doing it, it's not a sport. You don't see many, and I don't think Peyton Manning is doing that very much during a Colts game.
I want to ask you too about your all these other radio enterprises that you are involved in, because you used to have your own show on KMOX there in St. Louis, and in fact we met doing on your way too early morning show in Washington D.C. I don't know, over a decade ago.
Yeah.
But you are based in St. Louis, and yet you host these radio shows again, because I'm a regular listener to your podcast. You host these radio shows from all over the country, Louisville, Kentucky, and Seattle. How do you do that?
I have a studio in my home, and thanks to some high-tech hookups with these radio stations, I've left the world of full-time daily radio to enter the world of freelance daily radio. Uh-huh. And while I'm not on the air 50 weeks a year anymore, I'm on more like 40 weeks of the year now.
Wow.
Hosting radio shows for, as you mentioned, Louisville and Seattle and Chicago and Washington, D.C., and another radio station here in St. Louis, KTRS. And I've been doing this for a couple of years now, and I do it all out of a studio in my home. I put the headphones on. I've got a microphone and a setup right at my desk in my office here, and I can be on anywhere that they've got an antenna.
Wow. And you're just looking on the web and looking at a clock so you know what the right time is in that web time zone and pretending you're in that city.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because I do literally change everything in my office to the time zone of the station I'm on.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm on in Seattle, I have changed my clocks on my computer and in the office to Pacific time. If I'm on in Louisville, I'm putting it on Eastern time. If I'm here in Chicago or St. Louis, obviously, I'm on my regular Central time. But I actually have to do that because I didn't do it at the very beginning of this, and I would give the wrong time.
Oh.
I would say, you know, it's 9:08, and it would actually be 10:08 for my listeners.
Right.
And one of the engineers finally said, "Why are you giving the wrong time?" "Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? I'm actually giving the right time, just not for you."
I'm sorry, who's listening?
It's 9:08 somewhere.
Yeah, right. Who's listening to this show again?
Yeah. So, but, you know, the engineers and the phone calls and the newscasts and the commercials and all that sort of stuff still originates at the radio station, and I'm hearing it through my headphones here in my home office and doing everything else, and mentally turning myself into a Seattle resident or a Louisville resident or a Chicago resident, thanks to the interwebs, as we call them, which gives me access to whatever is going on in all of those towns.
I think that is, I mean, it seems like, you know, losing your show at KMOX was the best thing that ever happened. It sounds like the coolest setup ever.
Well, it certainly makes my commute a lot better.
Yeah, yeah. Do you prefer this? Do you prefer this freelance, or would you rather have a regular gig?
I'm really happy doing what I'm doing now. I can't imagine going back and working full-time at any radio station unless they gave me a huge check. And I think I speak for everyone when I say, give me a huge check, and then we'll talk.
Hi, this is Vicki Lewis, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Also, if you get a second, go to Dig Station and download my album, East of Midnight. Bye.
Where can you see the RSC? June is busting out all over with performances of Shakespeare Abridged Revised at San Diego Repertory Theater in San Diego, California, and then the completely Hollywood Abridged at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. But we'll also be working on the RSC's seventh stage show this summer, The Complete World of Sports Abridged, which will premiere at Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts this September. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for specific venue and ticket information.
One of the highest compliments you can pay, and I know this because I've heard you say it, is to call somebody a broadcaster.
Yes.
What does that mean? What does that mean to you, and why is that such a great thing?
That's a very good question. To me, a broadcaster is somebody who you can count on to do the show regardless of what happens. Now, there are talk show hosts who they come up with a topic or they have a guest and they can wing it every day, 5 days a week for 3-4 hours a day. There are newscasters who can do the news for several minutes of every hour, 5 days a week, every day of the year, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. There are announcers who are the radio station announcers or the TV announcers who, you know, this is CNN or whatever that is. I think a broadcaster has to have the skills that encompasses the ability to do all of that. And I like to think that I'm a broadcaster in the same way that, for instance, a Bob Costas is a broadcaster, who I love just being on the air and doing whatever it takes to keep the broadcast on the air. So if I'm doing a show about whatever and a big news story breaks out, I can anchor the coverage of that big news story without having to shift gears because I'm already in that gear as a broadcaster. In many other instances, if you had somebody who was a disc jockey or a talk show host or just a news person, they wouldn't be able to have all these different clubs in their bag that they could swing with when whatever happened, happened. And to me, a broadcaster is somebody who has that ability to not only broadcast to a broad audience, but broadcast about a broad variety of things. I've bragged many, many times that I can interview anybody about anything for 15 minutes. I think that's a basic skill as a broadcaster. And by the way, the fact that you called me and wanted to talk to me today proves that you might be a little bit of a broadcaster too, because if you can interview me for 15 minutes, Austin, you've got the ability.
Well, that is high praise coming from you. But I think what you're saying is absolutely right. It speaks to your broad knowledge and your broad interests too, because the range of the guests that you have, and this is why I, you know, started following your podcast, because you have guests from all across the spectrum of life. I mean, ridiculous, you know, reality show losers to chairmen of joint chiefs of staffs, to politicians, to dorks like the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you have the same. Well, you seem to have the same level of interest in all of that, but they're always interesting conversations, and that's what I love. They're just fascinating conversations about people that I might not necessarily hear about or listen to at any other time.
Well, thank you. I think it comes from just an endless curiosity, and also my philosophy about my shows has always been I'm going to do and talk about and talk with people that I'm interested in, because if I'm not interested, there's no way for me to get the listener interested. But to give you a TV analogy, Jay Leno is a comedian. David Letterman is a broadcaster.
Wow. Yeah,
If you ever wanted proof of that, go back and watch the show Dave did when he came back after 9/11.
Oh,
that was not a comedian on the air. That was not a talk show host on the air. That was a broadcaster.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Well, and in fact, as I said, you've interviewed all this wide range of people. You also interviewed your brother who was in New York City on 9/11. And I have to say, I started weeping as I listened to your conversation. It was an incredibly moving first-person account of what happened, and made even more moving because he's your brother and I know you, you know? It's not just because I know you, it's because I think you create that that relationship with your listeners. You know, we all know you, even though we all haven't been on your show like I have.
Well, thank you. That was a remarkable day, there was the emotion of, for your audience, I'll just explain that my brother at the time was a professor at New York Law School, whose offices were six blocks from the World Trade Center, and he lived in New Jersey and commuted in by train, a train that went through the World Trade Center. He had walked through that building that morning, had gotten to work, and of course the attacks happened, and we had no way of getting in touch with him because all the phone service in New York was knocked out. And so I spent the entire day calling my sister-in-law, his wife, trying to find out where he was, were their sons okay, was she okay, what was the story. She had no idea, so she couldn't be in touch with him. And it wasn't until late that night, 10, 10:30, 11 o'clock that night, that he finally got home through an unbelievably long route that involved going to upstate New York and then across the Hudson and then all the way back down into New Jersey. And it was only then that he could call me and say, I'm fine. And he told me the story, and I said, come on the air with me tomorrow morning and tell the story of being there and the impact that this day had on your life. And there was a part of it where he talked about how there was a place in the World Trade Center mall that was right under the building where all of these commuters would go as they came in through New Jersey Transit or the New York City subway system. And there was a woman who ran a little muffin stand there. And he stopped there every day. And he kind of knew this woman only as, good morning, how are you? I'll have, you know, whatever the kind of muffin he was going to get. And he would go on. But he knew her from that everyday encounter. And it struck him, as we were talking on the radio and he was talking about this, it struck him that she was probably dead. That she had probably lost her life that day when the towers came down. And I could hear the emotion in his voice, and it made the hair on the back of my neck stand up, and I was struck with that same emotion at the same time. And I think some of that came through the radio, because I've heard from a lot of people, including you, that they remember that as part of the 9/11 story from hearing my brother tell it. And I replayed that interview on the anniversary of 9/11 every year through last year. Through 2009. I don't know if I'll play it again this year, but it just seemed appropriate because it gave you more than just a sense of a news story that you were familiar with. It gave it a sense of a personal connection to remind you that there were people who were affected by this, some who died, some who didn't, some who will carry the legacy of that day with them forever. And just a simple daily encounter with somebody who you don't even know can stick in your memory and affect you so much later.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your sport versus game theories via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, and our Reduced Shakespeare Company fan page at facebook.com. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, one-eyed Jack Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Rebecca Hall. No reason, it's just random. Thanks to Paul Harris. Check out his blogs and podcast at harrisonline.com. Special thanks to Vicki Lewis from News Radio and Curb Your Enthusiasm. Check out her album East of Midnight on Amazon.com, CD Baby, Dig Station, and iTunes. I'll leave you with a track from her album as we close. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 183/549 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
You know, if you think of it in terms of ESPN, remember that when that network started, it was the entertainment and sports programming network. I think poker fits into the E, not the S. And by the way, I'm a fan of your podcast as well.
She perseveres as she holds to her own. She prays for a little peace of rain to wash the wreckage of the things she's seen. And she turns her head from the living dead.
Podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.